Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan de Burka Butler is with us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
John, how are you getting on?
Germany we're going to go to first. Now, there was a bit of controversy about this, almost as if the government were sniffing towards introducing mandatory military service for young men.
Yeah, it's complicated. So Friedrich Merz, who's the relatively new chancellor, has indicated for a long time that he wanted to increase the numbers in the army, right? So that's a big part of what he wants to do. And he's got sign off for it, it should be said, from Parliament. So they're injecting a lot of money into that. And that's because of the situation in Ukraine and perceived threats from Russia. So he wants Germany to have the biggest army in Europe, right? So the goal is to, they currently have about 180,000 personnel in the army, and they want to bring it up to 260,000 by 2035, okay? And have 200,000 people as reservists. So back in January of this year, in fact, on January the 1st, they introduced the Military Service Modernization Act, right? And what that did was effectively, it allowed for conscription in theory, right? So what it's doing is it's introducing voluntary conscription. So it's not compulsory yet, but it'll be voluntary.
I don't know. Isn't that a contradiction in terms? Voluntary conscription.
Well, it's military service.
Right.
Will we call it that?
Yeah.
Then,
okay,
sorry,
right.
Sorry if I got my words confused. Sorry. Military service. Sorry. And so the idea being that if in this particular law, the idea being that if they need to, if there's a crisis, they can turn it into conscription,
okay, right?
I guess.
But this would be kind of a system where, and it's voluntary at the moment, that you go in for a year or 6 months or something,
yes,
full time.
Yes. Yeah,
so rather than it's like the, remember the FCA?
Yeah.
Still have the FCA here.
Here.
Yeah, that was, they were reservists.
Yeah.
FCA stood for the Free Clothes Association. A lot of people thought at the time because they're fantastic boots.
So what this does is you'd sign up for 23 months, and they're actually really trying to incentivize,
wow,
people.
Okay.
So they're paying quite a bit. I think it's $2,600 per month, and you get free accommodation and free medical insurance, all that kind of thing. So you're coming out with a, so if you're 18 or 19, you just finished school and you said to yourself, well, I'd like to travel the world.
Mm.
Maybe go off to the army for 2 years and,
yeah,
save up a bit of money. And but as part of that, they're offering long-term contracts as well for people who want to stay, right? So they're really incentivizing it. But anyway, buried deep within this Military Service Modernization Act was a provision which basically said that males between the ages of 17 and 45 weren't allowed to go abroad for 3 months. But nobody really noticed it,
yeah,
until a newspaper, a small newspaper in Germany, wrote an article about it, and then it really got traction. And they looked into the act, and it was there. And pressure came then on the government to reverse this. They were saying, you know, freedom of movement, you know, you can't do this. And so now the latest news is that the Defence Minister, Boris Pistorius, has backtracked on this, and they have suspended that particular provision. They said, yes, it was in there, absolutely, but it wasn't acted upon. So nobody has been told to go to their nearest local military camp or office or wherever they do it and tell people that you're going away for more than 3 months. So it hasn't kicked in at all. Now it's been suspended, so we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But they said it has been suspended.
It could be reactivated.
But it could be reactivated. And he took the opportunity to say that to people. To basically say, look, it's in there, but we're putting it on pause. But if there's a problem, it will be enacted.
Yeah. Is the German army the biggest in Europe? Or
I don't know if it is at the moment. Certainly during the Cold War it was.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is at the moment. I imagine it would be a toss-up between Germany and France as to who has the biggest armies. I'm not 100% sure, I have to say.
But certainly there's a obvious aim there to make it significantly bigger. And
oh yeah, this 260,000 people with 200,000 reservists. So you know you're approaching 500,000, which is what it was around about the time of the falling of the Berlin Wall in West Germany. So yeah.
My word, right. Okay, this is a story. This is about a Chilean woman who's lost her extradition battle.
Yeah. So, yes, this is Adriana Rivas, 72-year-old Chilean woman who has been resident in Australia since 1978. She moved there that year. And she had been involved with the regime of Augusto Pinochet, or at least, and she's admitted as much, all right, now. The accusations that are being levelled against her is that she was responsible, or at least played a big part, in the kidnapping and subsequent disappearance of seven members of the Chilean Communist Party, right, who, of course, Pinochet tried his best to get rid of all members during his time. So he was there from 73 to 1990, good friend of Thatcher, as we know. And got plenty of help from the Americans along the way as well, right? But she was the personal secretary for the head of the secret police there, a man by the name of Manuel Contreras, who was the head of that organization from 1973 to 1976. And it is said that she was more than a personal secretary, that she was very much involved in orchestrating kidnappings, torturings, these kind of things. And specifically these charges have been laid against her of aggravated kidnapping, okay, happened in that period. So she was in the United States in Australia from 1978, but went back home to Chile to visit her family in 2006, and she was arrested there. She was given bail, and she somehow managed to leave the country and get back to Australia and continue her life there. An extradition order was put in place by the Chilean government in 2014. She was eventually arrested in 2019, and she's been in prison in the United States fighting this extradition battle.
In Australia or in the US?
I keep saying the United States for some reason. In Australia. Thank you, Sean. And she was there for 7 years as she fought this extradition battle, which she has now lost.
Right.
It looks like she's going to be sent back, and she will face these charges for aggravated kidnapping.
Yeah. And how much has she admitted to? She was involved in the regime?
Yeah, she has admitted to being part of the what's called the National Intelligence Directorate, known as DINA. And she said that, in fact, in an interview that she did in 2013 in Australia, she admitted that she was involved in it, and she indeed said it was the best. They were the best years of her life. But she said that she wasn't involved in any wrongdoing or what you'd call criminal activity, even though she made no apology for what happened during the regime of Pinochet. So when she goes back, if she's sent back, which is highly likely at this stage, she will face those charges of aggravated kidnapping. I think one of her arguments along the way was, you know, oh, if you send me back, I'll be charged for something else. You know, murder, but it hasn't been proved that they were murdered. They just haven't been seen for 50 years.
They disappeared. Indeed. I wonder, are there many people that the Chilean government are hunting for around the world from the Pinochet days?
I would say there probably are, like, and I can only go off what's happening in the region. I know, like, in Argentina, there's been a lot of it going on where you're getting 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds being flung in prison for things that they did during their, during their harsh regime there. I can't say for sure whether it's happening in Chile, but I'm sure she's not the only, I'd say she's not the only one. Now, the one thing that she has in her favour is that Chile last year voted in a new fairly right-wing president who may or may not get involved in a Trumpian type way and pardon her. I'd say it'd be more trouble for him than it's worth, but she might be banking on it.
Right, Zimbabwe we're going to go to next. So there are plans to scrap the presidential election. I sell fish.
Yeah, well, these presidential elections have been there since 1990, okay? But, you know, some of them were, you know, just bogus, obviously, because Mugabe was there. Yeah. So Mugabe is gone since 2017. And you've got Emmerson Mnangagwa, who's known as the Crocodile, is his nickname because he's a fairly vicious character himself. Who's been there since then. He'd want to be some character if he's able to get the army on his side to get rid of Mugabe in the first place, right? So he was never going to be the most benevolent of leaders. And he's 83 now himself, Mnangagwa, and it looks like he wants to hold on to power, right? So a new bill has been introduced. I think it's been signed off by Cabinet, And now it has to go to Parliament. And effectively what it's going to do is it's going to make amendments to the Constitution, right? And they're going to scrap presidential elections, right? So what will happen is you'll have presidents who are now appointed by Parliament.
And so, for life.
Well, no, the term limits are still there. So this is another part of it.
Okay.
So this detail is very important. The term limits are still there in as much as that you can only serve two terms. But what's being proposed here is the extension of those terms from 5 years to 7 years.
Okay.
Right? So the opposition are pointing out, well, this is absolutely ridiculous because they're saying, well, okay, the Constitution says that, you know, it's the length of time that a person serves in office, you know, so it shouldn't be about the two terms. Mm. Now, ZANU-PF, who is Mnangagwa's party and have been ruling the country since independence in 1980, they're saying, well, no, it's the two terms. We're not changing anything. You can still only serve two terms. We're just lengthening those terms. It's about the electoral cycle rather than anything else.
But in effect, that would mean Mnangagwa's term is going to be extended from the end of 28 up to what?
2030. Yeah. So what is he now? Did we say 83? So he'd be 86 by the time he has to stand for election again, if indeed he does.
And are they giving any reason why they feel the need to change these things?
Yes, they're saying effectively that the democracy that has now been put in place since Mugabe has left needs to be consolidated. And the way to do that is by giving presidents longer terms. They're also saying that presidential elections have historically in Zimbabwe, and they have a bit of a point here, led to violence.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're saying, you know, let's do away with them altogether. This whole democracy stuff is, you know, gets in the way of stability.
How powerful is the president in?
Hugely powerful. I mean, he dictates everything, appoints the cabinet, and certainly and looks after the army. So you know, Mnangagwa is all powerful, but that is the fear. The opposition are saying
the president appoints the cabinet who appoints the president.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
that
yeah.
makes total sense.
Yeah. But it's not the only place that does that. That is what happens. So it looks like it'll be a shoo-in. Although there has already been cases lodged to the Constitutional Court against it. So, and I did try and look up to see was that stacked with ZANU-PF supporters, but I couldn't get that type of detail, unfortunately. So I don't know, will it get past the Constitutional Court? So it remains to be seen.
Yeah, right. Bangladesh we're going to go to next, where there's a vaccination drive going on there. I suppose this is a positive story, but there has been an outbreak of measles there.
Yes, there has, and it's been going since March. And so far, they have confirmed over 900 cases since they got worried about it. And there's been over 100 deaths of children amid the rise in measles in the country. So between the government and the United Nations and various bodies, they're pushing through this vaccination drive, focusing on various parts of the country that seem to be more exposed to it, obviously, starting there. And curiously enough, it seems that they're going to focus on children aged 6 months, starting at 6 months and up to five. Now, I had a look at what we do here, and we don't start vaccinating children against measles until 12 months.
Yeah.
So it seems quite young, but they're obviously concerned about the fact that a third of those affected are under the age of 9 months. So they're saying, well, we need to go sooner. Mm. Now, in the past, it has had problems with measles. In 1979, it introduced a massive campaign, and it's been quite successful. So the coverage has raised since then from fully immunized children from 2% up to 82%. So it's done quite well. But in the last number of years, and we've covered this as well, there's been political turmoil there. They got rid of Sheikh Hasina, and there was an interim government for about 2 years. So in that intervening period, there's been a lot of turmoil, and it looks like this vaccination program has suffered as a result. And this is the result of that.
Right. So, but it's more that they just took their eye off the ball rather than there was an anti-vaccine.
Yeah, I think it really was that. Now, that it should be said that there's a global increase in measles over the last few years.
Mm.
And that part is partly in the West, certainly to do with people who are, you know, anti-vaxxers as such.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Right, Spain we're going to go to finally. I suppose a bit of a spat between Spain and Israel to do with... It was an effigy of Netanyahu.
Yes, so this is in a town called El Burgo, a small town near the city of Malaga in the south of the country. And Spain is great, particularly during Easter and the Easter period, for all their festivals and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've been doing in this particular town for the last number of years is they've been making huge effigies and have been loading them with gunpowder. All right, so they've done Trump before and they've done Putin before, and everybody gathers around and the thing goes off. So in this case, they had a 7 meter figure of Benjamin Netanyahu packed with 31 pounds of gunpowder, right? And they set the gunpowder off and blew the effigy to bits, obviously. And there was lots of screaming and shouting and celebrations. Now, you can actually see it. I have it on my Instagram stories at De Burka Butler. Okay. So you can have a look at it there. It doesn't last very long. But some people in Israel got very upset about it, and the foreign minister straight away went on to X and came up with this particular statement. I'll quote him if you don't mind. The appalling anti-Semitic hatred on display here is a direct result of Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez's government's systemic incitement. So he didn't waste an opportunity to
get the boot in there.
Get the boot in.
Yeah, and given all international diplomacy happens on X now, or
yes,
social, did the Spanish government respond to this?
They did, rather disappointingly, but I suppose they had to in some way. So the foreign ministry, you'll note that it wasn't the foreign minister, but the foreign ministry, said that the Spanish government is committed to fighting against anti-Semitism and any form of hate or discrimination. As such, we totally reject any insidious allegation which suggests the contrary. And it should be said that they are not getting on very well at the minute, Israel and Spain. Spain, since Gaza, has been a harsh critic of Israel.
Mm.
So for the last 2 years, 2.5 years. Of course, when the whole, what did he call it, Trump? Excursion.
Yeah,
not incursion.
Limited excursion. Military operation.
Yeah.
Thereabouts.
Into Iran started, Spain closed off airspace. And Spain has been very critical of what's been going on in Lebanon as well in recent weeks.
Yeah.
So they're not getting on. So I don't think there'll be any fear of Netanyahu and Sanchez meeting each other over the next few weeks.
Right, so what's going to happen over the next week?
Yeah, well, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, really, who knows?
The only thing I can say is that on Sunday there are early elections in Bulgaria.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting enough to look at there. And then on Sunday, it's St. George's Day.
Okay.
We'll all get out our red crosses.
We will indeed, yes. Jonathan, thanks a million. Thanks, as ever. Jonathan De Burka Butler there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.